Hello. This segment of the Mind Mac podcast is a standalone due to the sensitivity of the topic discussed. In this episode, talk of suicide and self-harm will be discussed. If you are sensitive to this topic, please click off of this episode and join us on the next. If you or anyone you know is struggling, please do not hesitate to reach out for help. The National Suicide Hotline number is 988, which you can call or text at any time. And if you are in immediate danger, always contact 911 first. Thank you. Hi, my name is Ailey, and welcome to my segment on the MyMac podcast. Today, I am here with a special guest to talk about suicide prevention awareness. So, could you please introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Anna Terbeek, and I have been a social worker in the community for about 20 years now.
Cool. All right. So, could you please explain the most common risk factors and warning signs for suicide that people should be more aware of?
Yeah, that's a really great question because I think a lot of people don't know what to be looking for, so they don't know how to help. But when we look at suicide warning signs, they usually fall into one of three categories. Either someone's talking differently, they're behaving differently, or their mood changes. So when we think of that talk, we hear somebody talking about suicide, maybe talking about being a burden to others or feeling trapped or having no reason to live. Those would be some of those warning signs. I kind of think of them as invitations that somebody's just putting out feelers, like who's really listening, who's going to cue in on this. And I think there's a myth that says, well, if I ask somebody if they're feeling suicidal, I'm just going to put that idea in their head. But really, that is a myth. One of the best ways we can prevent suicide is by noticing that somebody's hurting and asking those questions. So if we notice somebody talking differently, we want to be really cued into that. But we also, if somebody is behaving differently, we want to be cued into that as well. So things we might see, behavioral changes, maybe somebody withdrawing from activities or just not returning phone calls or not wanting to hang out with their friends or giving away prized possessions. With teenagers in particular, I've seen kids give away passwords to social media thinking, well, I'm not going to be around any longer, so I want somebody else to be able to have this. And then we're looking for some of those changes in mood. Somebody just seeming really down, depressed, anxious, maybe showing signs of humiliation or irritability. When that seems like a sudden change for that person, you know your friends, and if they seem to be acting differently, we want to stop and ask further questions. We're not going to make them feel more anxious or put those ideas in their head. If they're feeling that way, they want somebody to ask. They want somebody to care about them.
Absolutely. And what are some of the challenges and misconceptions surrounding suicide that you've encountered in your work, and how do you address them?
That's a good question. I think there's some myths on both sides, both for the community, but also for the person experiencing a mental health issue. On the community side, part of that misconception or myth is feeling like, well, this is none of my business and I shouldn't ask somebody about this. If I do ask somebody about this, I'm just getting in their business. That is a myth. One of the ways we can prevent that is by opening up that conversation. One of the best ways to prevent suicide, like I said, is having somebody respond to somebody in that authentic, caring, compassionate way. But on the flip side, for the person experiencing a mental health crisis or feeling suicidal, I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that there's no hope, there's no help for me, this is how my life's going to be forever. And research shows us that with treatment, 70 to 90% of people with suicidal thoughts do get better, but we need to get them connected with that help and that treatment because it's probably not going to go away on its own, but there are other options, and we really want people to start seeing that there are other choices and there is help and hope available for them.
And so are there any specific strategies or approaches that schools specifically can implement to promote the talk of mental health and reduce suicide rates? And what have you seen work, if you've had any?
Yeah, there's a lot of great things that schools can do. Biggest thing is just make sure that students know how to get that help. One of the protective factors is actually just having somebody have awareness of and access of how to get mental health treatment. So anything that schools can do to make sure that maybe in the bathrooms they have the 988 suicide prevention line number. If we always know how to get in contact with our social worker or counselor here at school if we need help, that we have resources posted around, and then make this conversation something that's a normal. A lot of schools have really great programs like Okay to Say or Be Nice that really promote, hey, if I'm concerned about my friend, here's how I get them help and here's how I talk to them. We want to really validate those students that bring forth that information, because if my friend tells me that they're feeling suicidal and says, please don't tell anybody, that is never a secret that we want to keep. If somebody is at risk and my friend is going to be hurting, I want to go tell an adult, even if I'm breaking my friend's trust. I'd rather have that friend angry at me than have them hurt in any way. So for schools, just increasing that culture of let's help each other and let's support each other. And if we notice something about our friend, this is how we get help for that person. And here's the access and the resources that we can turn to get that friend to help.
Absolutely. And then what, in your opinion, what role does social media specifically play in the rates of suicide?
That is a very emerging topic in research right now. The Surgeon General just put out a warning saying that this needs to be studied further. Social media can be a great tool, especially during COVID when we were all shut in and we couldn't talk to each other and be physically present. It was a great way to connect with our friends and see what was going on. And it can be great in the sense that when people feel a sense of belonging and community, their suicide risk is less. So if we can be connected on social media and, you know, say, oh, I met you at school. I had no idea that you liked this activity and that's like me. And then we can connect. But on the flip side, there's times when social media can be really detrimental as well. It's really easy to compare ourselves to others. Everyone puts their best, the best of themselves on social media. And so when I'm at home and I'm looking at all my friends and they look beautiful and they look like they're having fun all the time and they're with their other friends and I'm sitting at home, it can feel really lonely as well. So I think there has to be a really delicate balance of when social media is helpful for somebody and when it's time to shut it down. And I can share this with you too, but there's this really cool social media alert and almost looks like a prescription that I've shared with people at schools. And I think it's really helpful for teenagers to fill out, just saying, here's when social media is helpful for me, but when I'm feeling down, depressed, if this is starting to get negative for me, this is when I need to turn it off and what other things can I do during that time? Because we want to have those connections, but we want them to be real, authentic connections. And if it's strictly a connection on social media, that's not always healthy. The other downfall to social media is that, unfortunately, bullying happens there. We try in our schools to be as best as we can and not have that bullying, but we know that that happens on social media. Kids can't go home and get away from it at all the time. And there's times when kids have made a mistake, but then people post it on social media and it feels huge. And it's hard to move beyond that. And I think what's really important is for teenagers in particular to remember there is, no matter what the mistake was, no matter what is out there, there is always a way out. There are adults that are around that are willing to walk with you and figure it out with you. It doesn't have to be the end just because something got posted on social media about you or somebody's bullying you. It feels like forever right now, but there are always people that are there to help. We just need to find them, which isn't always easy when you're in that space. Yeah. But
And then for those who have tuned into this podcast and are feeling ready to talk about their experiences to somebody, what are resources that are easily accessible that they can reach out to?
Great question. One resource that's available 24 hours a day is by calling the Suicide Prevention Hotline. That is a 1-800 number. It's 1-800-273-TALK. Or you can text 741-741. You can text any word to that and get the conversation started. Or as of July of last year, 988 is available, which directly connects you to that Suicide Prevention Lifeline. You can call 988 from any number, or you can text 988 from any cell phone and get directly connected. That is a great resource because it's always available. But then some other local resources, Montcalm Care Network, which is community mental health in Montcalm County, that resource is always available as well. They have a 24-hour access number. There are also many community resources that they have on their website for one-on-one counseling, which is awesome. They have a really cool, I don't remember what it's called, like a hope and healing or hope and health resource guide that they put together every year. So that's a great one. But also talking to a counselor or social worker at school, great option. If you're feeling like you need some extra help, they are there and help and are able to help prepare you for whatever whatever you need. I would always say, if ever you are feeling like you might harm yourself or kill yourself, also always an option is to call 911 when it's an emergency. Police officers are there. They will help you get to the next level of care that you need. Never hesitate to reach out to somebody. You matter. Your life matters. We want you here tomorrow. And if you have a friend who's struggling, like I always say, I would rather have an angry friend than a dead friend. If a friend tells me something, even if they tell me not to tell anyone, I would rather break that person's trust and go and get them the help that they need than have them lost to suicide. Just saying, hey, let's call 988 together. Let's sit and do this together, or I'm going to stay with you. If you are concerned about somebody, don't leave them alone. Make sure that they are with you or another trusted adult so that we can get them to the help that they need.
Absolutely. Thank you, Anna, for coming on to the MyMac podcast today, and thank you for all the helpful information that you've shared. And we will see you next time. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the MyMac podcast, and we hope to see you on the next.